Hello and welcome to the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast for the 2nd of November 2014. My name's TRP Watson, and this week I'm joined by Johnny Fox, Paul in London, Gareth James and Julie Raby. We're now going to talk about Sweeney Todd at Harrington's Pie and Mash Shop. This is done under the aegis of the Tooting Arts Club. John, tell me more about this and what you thought of it.
It's been around a long time, hasn't it? Is it 25 years old, sometimes slasher, thriller, musical?
It's older.
It's
1979.
Older than that. 79, good heavens. About the demon barber of Fleet Street, who is alleged to have been a real person. I believe he's supposed to have killed about 170 people, and that his downstairs neighbour at the barber shop that he maintained in Fleet Street was indeed a pie shop, and some of his corpses allegedly ended up in the meat pies. And I suppose it's really clever to turn this into a music because it's the blackest possible subject, and yet Sweeney Todd itself is comedic and very entertaining. Now, we've seen a lot of them. And you've seen as many Sweeney Todds as I have, and I've tried to count them, and it's somewhere just under 20. And two or three of them even in the last year, because there was the revival at Chichester, which then came to London, and I saw both of those. And there was the wonderful production which opened and closed Twickenham Theatre very recently with David Bedella and Sarah Ingram. And I thought that was one of the most sensational, compact, musically brilliant, superbly staged versions of Sweeney Todd that I've ever seen. And then we go to Tooting and something else happens to notch it up yet another gear and make it even more compelling. And I think that by staging it in an actual pie shop, 106-year-old pie shop, Harrington's Pie and Mash Shop in Tooting has been a local institution for a very long time. And it's still in operation. It's still serving pies. They stop serving pies at 7 o'clock. They wipe the counters down and they then start the production at 7:30. It is amazing that they manage this juxtaposition. And I think this is one of those things because it is such a small space. There are only 32 seats. There are only 40 performances or something like. It's one of those things that you will tell somebody else's grandchildren, I was there. It's that good. So we pitch up, and at about 6:30 or something like that, the producer very kindly arranges for us to have a pie and mash, and I think Paul had the green viscous liquor that goes on top of the pies.
And delicious.
Was it delicious? I'm so pleased for you. I had the fryer. Mine was drier.
It wasn't one of the worst pies in London, though.
It was not one of the worst
pies
in London. I thought it was a bit under-seasoned, actually, and I really wanted it peppered with actual shepherd on top. We could do this all night, but let's not. It was delicious, and it was delicious in terms of the experience, because there were still local people who were not going to be part of the audience eating their early evening pies, and they went away. And then the audience gathers in a barber shop across the street. How, you know, brilliant and trope-like that is. And they positioned a bar in the back of the barbers, and there's a bit of ebb and flow across the street as the audience are assembled into the pie shop itself. And then there's a sudden lighting cue, boom, and the thing just explodes all over you like a hot pie filling. It's only a cast of eight and three musicians, but boy, do they fill the space. And they don't even only fill the space where they're supposed to be acting in, because there's no scenery, there's no major effects. There is a staircase that goes upstairs in the pie shop. There's a counter. There is the piano. Between those three things, that embodies everything that happens in this very grandiose musical that has a lot of different sets. And they are standing on your table. They are singing in your face. They are shoving you up on the bench so that they can sit down. They are thrusting somebody's body against you and killing it. I mean, it really is the most immersive site-specific theatre I can remember going to for a very long time. Almost, and apart from Yumi Bum Bum Train, I can't think of anything else where you're so central to what's going on. And what that transfers to you is a kind of culpability for it as well. You feel more worried for what is going to happen in the plot. And I've never felt that watching this musical before, however good the performances are. So it's hard to imagine, you know, short of being an extra on Crime Watch, how you get any closer to a killing. And it's also hard to imagine how you get any closer to the true beating, bleeding heart of Sondheim's musical thriller. The production is ferociously ingenious. I mean, they do this with the simplest of hand props. But I remember first being charmed that when Sweeney Todd and the sailor are just talking, and they're supposed to be on, I think they're on a small boat coming from Tilbury up the river to London. And they do the sound, they're just sat on the counter as though it were the bench on the boat. And just gently behind them, a woman is stirring water in a bucket with a cup. And it just makes the perfect Thames plashing sound. And and the whole thing is captivating, because that's how they do all the effects. And apart from a single red floodlight and a lot of stage blood that identifies the killings, and the wonderful pianist blowing a whistle, that's the only thing that gives you the sense of space and event. And it's very believable. You know, you really do think the ovens are just off stage. And even though people are killed at your feet, your suspension of disbelief is such that it is very strongly affecting. Paul may say some more about the singing as well, but we both felt that we'd never heard this better sung. It was brilliantly sung at Twickenham, and they had a bigger band to support them, which was good. But here, again, the very, very close intimacy means you don't get wonderful balance, as you would if the sound was mixed through a sound desk. But you do hear individual voices with stunning clarity. And again, the accuracy. I've never, ever heard Sweeney Todd sung so well on the note and on the time as they do. You know, there's this very complicated counterpoint duet called Kiss Me, where the sailor and Joanna blend their voices in the first part of the first act. And then when he first meets her, and then later there's a further counterpoint with the Beadle and the judge singing. So it's a quartet. It's a very complicated operatic quartet, really. And you have this girl's voice, which is Sondheim wrote in nosebleed position, you know, almost all their notes are way above the treble clef. You've got the, I think it's two tenors and a baritone. It is wonderfully done. Nadim Naaman, I think he's half Lebanese actor playing the sailor. Beautiful, warm, very unforced tenor and lots of unactory charm, if you see what I mean. Just a very natural, very, very nice voice to listen to. I thought that Grace Chapman, who is really straight out of Art's Ed, did an astonishingly good job, certainly far better than Lucy May Barker or other people that I'd heard do this really awkwardly written Joanna. The judge is good, but I think Ian Mowat is quite outstanding as the Beadle. He's got all the greasy gruesomeness that you might recognise from Timothy Spall in the movie, but then he's got what Spall doesn't have, a tremendously fine, accurate, expressive singing voice, and he has a lot of different things, different types of song to portray, and I thought he was really, really fine. Paul, maybe you can talk a little bit more about the singing and tell us what you thought about Jeremy Seacombe as Todd or Siobhan McCarthy as Mrs. Lovett.
Thanks, John. Well, actually, I think the music direction by Ben Cox really made this show, I think, what it is, because I think it's fine to have a claustrophobic production that puts you right in the center of the action. And the novelty of that is great and the simple staging and all that, but what combined with the music, which was so precise and so in time together, and there was some really fine music making with just such a very small, like I think it was a 3-piece band, and the vocal performances made the entire music. And just to have this clarity of sound that was so precise and so together was quite impressive. And I think also being so close to the action, and you had the singers, you know, spitting literally almost on you because of your proximity, you certainly knew you were surrounded by some terrifically talented people. I think for me, the whole production was terrific. And I think Siobhan McCarthy as Mrs. Lovett and Jeremy Seacombe as Sweeney Todd, they were probably fairly standard type renditions of both characters. I didn't think they were not like the Chichester Arts one where you suddenly saw, who was it, Imelda Staunton?
Did Mrs. Imelda Staunton and an almost unrecognizable Michael Ball, wasn't it? In
the yes, both of those were sort of almost like playing against type, or type of them, type, what they're usually typecast against in Michael Ball's case, whereas it was much more a traditional Mrs. Lovett and Jerry Seacombe was playing as Sweeney Todd. But I think, as you said, I think it's the supporting cast that were quite a surprise here. And I think Ian Mowat as Beadle Bamford in his, it was bordering on panto, some of his evil deliciousness of, and his singing. And when you're so close to the action, I think it just adds an extra dimension to it all. But I think, as you said before, that duet Kiss Me was incredibly well done. But also there were some of the other larger numbers where you as the audience get dragged into it. So the opening of the second half where they're singing God That's Good, talking about all the pies, the actors are at your table that you're sitting at, dancing and carrying on and singing while they get their pies. And so there was a small scene when they get up and dance away where John started to get a bit closer to the pie and noted that it was all glued together. But it's all part of the fun.
It was glued to the plate. It was like Mrs. Overall's biscuits in Acorn Antiques, the musical. I'm sure that's where they got the inspiration.
Yes. I think it was the actor playing Joanna. She was at our table and she told you off for moving her knife and fork because there's some very complicated choreography.
It's part of the choreography, and they use the cutlery for percussion as well. I mean, really, it's very, very nicely arranged. Clever.
Yeah, but all told, this is a terrific site-specific production by the Tooting Arts Club, which sort of seemed to be focused on doing site-specific productions. Rachel Edwards and Sue Dunn founded it in 2010. And interesting, this show, it also received some Kickstarter funding, but that wasn't all of it. And at the moment,
it's had some Arts Council money as well, I think.
Yes, because they've been doing some outreach work as well. But they've also got various other pots of funding as well to make this show happen. But the interesting thing is, if you look on their website, they are trying to source additional performances. So obviously the rave reviews, which are not just from you and I, John, seems to be from everyone.
No, other also-rans like Mark Shenton and Lynn Gardner have mentioned that they thought it was quite good too. So, I'm glad they agree with us.
Yes, don't just take our words for it. Some very important people said it was well worth killing for a ticket.
Yes.
And I think it'll be fascinating, even if the show doesn't manage to have additional runs, I think it'll be fascinating to see what they get up to next in Tooting, because I think it was a fantastic evening. The whole experience of having the pie, just being able to, interact with the actors so up so close. Maybe Jeremy Seacombe's yelling at the woman opposite was a little bit frightening for me, but I think everyone else had it.
What's for her?
She didn't. I think I flinched more than she did, actually. But anyway, but the whole thing is such a wonderful experience. I think it's almost like it's going on it's like a roller coaster ride at a fun fair. You know, it does have some thrills and will scare the hell out of you, but you're still going to enjoy it all the while. And I can't wait to see what they get up to next at Tooting.
We're now going to talk about Into the Woods, which has just finished at the old Rosencrown Theatre in Walthamstow. This is yet another one of All Star Productions' musicals, and this is, of course, Stephen Sondheim's fantasy musical, which is about to be made into a major motion picture, I believe, or be brought out as a major motion picture. I think they've made it. So what did you think of this production, John?
I think this is your last chance saloon opportunity to see an inventive production of Sweeney Todd before the Meryl Streep movie comes out and changes it forever. The Disney production, I think, is to premiere on Christmas Day in America and January the 10th, something like that, in the UK. And I think it will as dramatically alter people's perceptions of Into the Woods as the Johnny Depp, Helena Bonham Carter version of Sweeney Todd did. Having said that, Every time I go to Walthamstow, I am reminded of that line from Chorus Line, up a steep and very narrow stairway to a voice like a metronome, because the access to the theatre is still painfully tortuous and narrow, and you're never quite sure what's waiting for you at the top of the stairs. Very often it's a lot of cardboard scenery and people clumping about, but not here. There is a cleverness in both the concept and the execution of this show that takes All Star Productions into an entirely new character. And for me, this ranks as one of the best shows that they've ever put on at Walthamstow. So they've abandoned the cardboard cutout sets and the noisy, echoey wooden platforms in favour of a floor-level stage strewn with bit of camouflage netting, forest debris, wood shavings in a bucolic and very practical design by Gregor Donnelly, which opens up the space in a way I've not seen before, allows a 17-strong cast to move about and strut about and kick the autumnal leaves to their heart's content and to tremendous effect. There's no choreographer credited. Tim MacArthur has done the direction and musical staging himself, and it works really, really well. The stage always feels fully populated. The mechanical tricks for things like the beanstalk and the disappearance of, you know, Red Riding Hood being eaten by the wolf and so on are managed by the actors in a wonderfully improvised way. It's very clever. The other thing that the production has done, which I think is a piece of license that wouldn't wash quite so well after the film comes out, is they've decided to set it as though all the characters were a different flavour of chav. They're all very common, but they're differently common. So you've got the princes are posh boys from Made in Chelsea. Cinderella's sisters are pure permatan bling-wearing Essex girls from The Only Way is Essex. Rapunzel is a kind of dropout cokehead. And I think this is an homage to Walthamstow's famous EastEnders daughter, Daniela Westbrook, which I thought was absolutely wonderful piece of inventiveness. And although I found their Glaswegian accent a bit monotonous and eventually very intrusive, Jack and his mother are a kind of hilarious Glasgow Gorbals tenement family. And it's obvious that instead of being, you know, a mature actress like, say, Anne Reed was when they did it recently, Jack's mother is obviously, you know, had him at 14 and is the kind of person who goes around in a tangerine cheese wire thong and not quite matching tracksuit bottoms and so on. And they don't quite understand why, but even though in the story Little Red Riding Hood is not related to Jack and his mother, she also seemed to have a Scottish accent and be... Well, she seemed to be channeling Jimmy Cranky quite a lot of the time. I wondered if they'd just run out of different characters, or maybe nobody can do Brummy or something like that anyway. So among this kind of collection of people who really ought to be on Jeremy Kyle, at the centre there are two very fine and much more normalised performances by Paul Hutton, quite superb, and Joe Wickham as the childless baker and his wife in the story that Sondheim wrote as an original element, or Lapine also wrote as an original element. And it's the plot is that it's their all-consuming desire for a baby at any cost that causes them to have to go into the woods at the behest of their neighbour, a disguised witch, to obtain things that will allow her to break the spell of childlessness on them. But Hutton's Baker had a realistic excellence I've not noticed in the role before, and I really don't think James Corden is going to match in any respect in the film, certainly not as far as his singing is concerned in the one clip I've seen. It's terrible. So although Into the Woods is very busy with movement, and gosh, is it heavy with plot, it does require impeccable singing, and Aaron Klingham, the resident musical director of All Star Productions, has tweaked the orchestrations for a five-piece band to provide just the right amount of support for the unmiked cast, which I thought was very clever. And he's also drilled them to a point at which the diction, something very often muddied in Into the Woods, this is as clear as I've ever heard for the show. And again, unusually for this venue, you really won't miss a syllable. As you might expect, you know, a lot of the cast are making professional debuts. There's a lovely rich baritone from a very young man called Tim Phelps playing Rapunzel's prince. Robert Oliver plays the narrator as though he was kind of the Geordie voice that comments on Come Dine With Me. And I also thought that something else Aaron Klingon has devised is to make even the set piece songs weightless and conversational. So often they're given a bit of an operatic edge that they don't really need, but things like Stay With Me and No More done really, really well here without too much overemphasis. So as Cinderella sings, I would have settled for perfection, and this so nearly is that there are, you know, a couple of tiny, tiny flaws that just rob it of absolute five-star perfection. Sondheim often criticizes other composers for their repetitiveness, but Into the Woods takes any available biscuit for recycling the same tunes and phrases again and again and again. In any version, it's a long show, but they've allowed this one to touch 3 hours, which I thought felt a little bit self-indulgent. And, you know, it is an uncomfortable theatre. They have some issues to do with ventilation, and it gets very hot and very airless. And I don't know what the answer is, whether you fake it and position the interval earlier so people don't have to wait, you know, an hour and three quarters before they can get out. But they do need to find a way of blowing some more air through it. Again, I didn't really think The Witch was completely perfect. In the first half, Helen Rayburn is wonderful. She's a tetchy, rain-coated pensioner bent over her shopping trolley. But after the transformation, she's in a strange knotted sheath dress that really doesn't flatter her figure, and she seems to lose not just her magic powers, but also any ability to stand out from the other characters. You know, this may be deliberate, but you can't see Meryl standing for it. And in such a young cast, that there is occasional risk of it feeling a little bit like a very good student production. As I said, I found the Scots routine funny to start with, but then a bit wearing. And Sarah Waddell as Jack's mother, you know, she's punctuating every line with exactly the same gesture of her unlit cigarette. You know, the character has nowhere to go. And I also thought that Josh Pugh, who was, again, one of those posh, campy types as Cinderella's prince, he was very, very good as the prince, but the wolf didn't have quite the animal magnetism and the menace that it really needs in order that you're a little bit frightened on Red Riding Hood's behalf. So, yes, I would have said that had we reviewed this whilst the show was still running, take your last chance to go and see it. It was critically very, very well received, but, you know, again, it's in E17 and they do have some difficulty filling every performance, so there were seats available. But, yeah, the world will change forever, and this CGI-laden film will be on television every Christmas until the next millennium.
What did you think about it, Gareth?
I think this is a very ambitious show for a fringe theatre, and more ambitious than other Sondheim shows, I think. I think they've done a very good job of it. They created quite a big playing space. I'm not quite sure why, but the design, which I think is very clever, which is sort of wood chips and pallets and ladders, seems to have created a sort of quite a large space with quite sort of clever entrances and exits. I think it's the orchestra, or the small band, sound fabulous. I think the arrangements for strings, woodwind, and piano are just great. And as always at Walthamstow, the standards of Aaron Klingham's musical directions are very high indeed. For me, the vocals were really too uneven. It is, you know, a largely young cast, and I think these are very demanding roles vocally for a young cast. And I think there was an unevenness in the solo singing, and also a kind of touch of raggedness in the ensembles, where they sort of speak kind of ensembles where they're telling story by moving from one character to another in song. So that was the disappointing bit of it musically for me, but the band and the choruses and some of the solo vocals were indeed excellent. I didn't mind the staging, the whole idea of the sort of the chavvy staging. It all felt like a bit of an adventure playground, really, when you look at the sort of design. So I that was absolutely fine. So it was good rather than great for me. I felt that it was further into the run when I saw it, and it was actually a full house. But I had some of the issues that John had in that, you know, it did run at almost 3 hours in, you know, a theatre where the seating is very uncomfortable and it is a bit too hot. And I thought that was more to do with theatre discipline, to be honest, because it didn't start on time. The interval was elongated. And I think they took a sort of 2-hour, 40, 45-minute show and made it 3 hours through not managing that terribly well.
So that sort of affected it. And I think also from my point of view, I was probably sitting, as I'd come in a bit late, I was sitting in a poor place at the side, quite close to the band. And so I did miss some vocal. I did miss some lyrics. And I did think the balance between the band and the vocals for me wasn't as good as it would have been in the sort of central section, really. But, that's probably me being a bit grumpy. It was certainly, when I went last week, it was sold out. The audience absolutely lapped it up. I got the impression the audience was perhaps less used to Sondheim and therefore, not looking at it in the same way as I might look at it. But it's, it's an ambitious thing to do. Good for them for doing it, particularly, as the film's about to come out. A lot to enjoy about it and a few niggles from a grumpy old man, I think.
I apologise for the sound quality on the next item, and in editing it, I managed to lose a few words. I hope you can make head or tail of it. Thanks. We're now going to talk about His Pity She's a Whore at the Sam Wanamaker Playhouse, part of the Shakespeare's Globe. This is their newest candlelight production and is John Ford's 1620s play, which was for many years banned because of its sexual content and its tale of an incestuous relationship between Annabella and her brother Giovanni. And the play was, I think, not performed between the 1660s and about 1923. So it's something that was so distasteful to Georgian and Victorian society that they just couldn't find a way to put it on. This production stars Max Bennett and Fiona Button as the incestuous couple, and they are joined by such people as James Garnon, Michael Gould, Sam Cox, Philip Cumbus, Noma Dumezweni, and Edward Peel, amongst others. I've obviously missed a lot of people out. Julie, what did you think about this, and tell me more?
Well, I really liked this. I thought this was the kind of thing the Sonica Playhouse should be doing. It kind of got away from that tick every box thing that the Duchess of Malfi did. In a way, we've done everything in there, and let's see how we can tick it forward and make it work as part of an overall production. I think it was quite shocking, well, especially on that if the subject matter is quite interesting today. Other aspects of Jackie and tragedy don't move us in the same way, but the brother and sister fall in love is something that kind of quite engages us and makes us feel conflicted in our response to that. I thought it was a brilliant cast. I certainly love the way that James Garnon played the hapless suitor. It was really fun, and he used the body to get laughs and his gestures. That was really funny. And then when something happens to Caroline and come back as a cardinal dressed in this red sparkling and that worked really well because he comes back as quite a severe character. I thought it really kind of started to challenge that stereotype of the innocent woman, where she really played that part with grace. I'm a great fan of Savarni. Her Hippolyta was just sensational. So it was a really strong cast overall. And for me, watching it this time, I really went, I get it. This is Romeo and Juliet, but Romeo and Juliet with a real depth and twist, a real forbidden love with the nurse and the beast meddling the way through. So you could see that kind of response to Shakespeare's play there. So I thought this was absolutely fabulous. I was gripped for the 3 hours myself.
I did find it a very strong production, actually, and very well done. They do seem to have worked out how to do the mechanics of lighting it, and also they didn't cheat this time. The last time I went, they cheated a bit. They had one or two panels in the ceiling which they dropped down, and they were able to shine lights through. But this was candlelit throughout. They didn't use too much of opening the side entrances to bring in more light. They did that occasionally, but not that much. But they do seem to have really worked out how to light it properly, how to get the candlelight effectively, and how to have people carrying their own spotlights with them. They do seem to have worked out sort of all those mechanics now, and
it becomes really effective. And this is certainly the best production. I did feel that perhaps it was a little bit, I don't know how funny they wanted it to be, but I think people were having a good time. I mean, obviously James Garner gives this the rather hapless suitor to start off with, and he is very funny. I mean, he is one of these actors you just wonder why he isn't better known. I think that it's possible because he's sort of in a Globe specialist, he doesn't get enough attention outside. He hasn't done enough outside of the Globe for people really to sit up and notice him. But he is always such a good presence in them, and he's been in quite a lot of things at the Globe this year. So I'm just sort of waiting for somebody to realise how good he is and give him something to let him shine. But I've waited for an awful lot of actors like that to happen to an awful lot of actors, and it very rarely does. It's very well done. I did think Noma Dumuzueni, I like her a lot, but I would have liked to have seen a lot more of her. I mean, she doesn't have much of a good part. I mean, it is the major subplot, but I wanted more of her because she's always such a good presence in the play. But overall, this is a very good production and really uses the candlelight well and really uses the whole atmosphere in the theatre well.
Yeah, I agree. I just thought the way that they were carrying the lights worked much better than it did in The Duchess of Malfi. It just felt a lot slicker this time somehow. I think they've really kind of, you're not watching that all the time, you're actually watching the production, which I think is what made it exciting. I wasn't kind of thinking, oh, what they're going to do with the candles now, what they're going to do with the light now. I was actually engrossed in the whole production, which I thought was fantastic.
You can find us at AYULTP on Twitter, on the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast page in Facebook, on the web we are AYULTP.com, and the podcast can also be found on both iTunes and Stitcher, where you can leave a review. Thank you, goodbye.